Shrink Wrap Radio number 765, Dr. Edward Bruce Bynum on our African Unconscious.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Are we a species at war with itself? What does our African unconscious reveal about all of us? Dr. Edward Bruce Bynum urges people to come together in his new book, Our African Unconscious, The Black Origins of Mysticism and Psychology. Science, evolution, and deep religion all point us in the same direction. According to Dr. Bynum, ultimately, we must love each other or die. He's also a licensed psychologist and diplomat in clinical psychology, and a senior fellow in the National Association for Applied Psychophysiology and Biofeedback. His focus is psychosomatic medicine, hypnosis, and individual psychotherapy. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Edward Bruce Bynum, welcome back to Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's great to be back. Great to be back. Been looking forward to this for a while.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you on the show again. You were here back in 2017, and then we were discussing your book on the dream life of families. And so your interests are very wide and cover a lot of ground, but it was great to discover that we had that interest in dream work in common.
Yes, yes, yes.
So we had a good discussion then. So today we're going to be talking about your book, Our African Unconscious, The Black Origins of Mysticism and Psychology. And this actually is a revision of a 1999 book with a different title. What was that title?
That title was The African Unconscious and Roots of Ancient Mysticism and Modern Psychology. And after a number of years, I took it off because I was continuing to make improvements on it and making notes. And if I ever do another edition, I want to make sure I put this in and add more of this and so on and so forth. So I eventually did that, found another publisher. And the second edition, I hope, is fuller and richer. There are areas that I didn't have enough room last time to touch on.
Yeah.
And this time, I hope I've been able to do that. And to show that it is not so much the African unconscious, but all of us, you, me, all of humanity. We all come out of an African source, an African template. And what I wanted to do is really explain, describe, and explore that in even more detail, and to really try and personalize the journey as much as I could.
Well, I didn't see the original book, but this book, it looks to me like you added a whole lot of, I'm guessing you added a whole lot more material.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. This book is actually kind of encyclopedic, I would say. It is so broad. It takes in, it looks at the unconscious and at human evolution and cosmological evolution,
they're not that far apart.
Yeah, and pretty much everything, you know, from so many different perspectives. So I have to congratulate you on your applying your great intelligence and intuition to such a huge project, because it feels like a really huge thing to take on. Who's your intended audience?
My intended audience is several groups of folks. The vast focus is on everyday folks, people who go food shopping, pay the bills, the mortgage, the rent, and who sort of know that the world is changing, and it's changing faster than we thought in ways that are not always very predictable. Like we have a vast ecological crisis that nobody ignores anymore. We know it's here.
Right.
We have different opinions about how bad it is, but we all know that it's here. We also know that our political orders and economic orders are in big realignments going on, And also, if we look around, we also recognize that our species is coming together from all different parts of the planet and every different area of the planet. And so we're all sort of like running into each other. And so there are massive changes afoot. And I went back and I tried, okay, now what? I know we have these vast differences on the surface of things. There are different ethnic groups, religious groups, social groups, economic groups. What is our common inheritance? What is that that is primordial and fundamental about us as a species? And that is what brought me to the African unconscious, because intuitively, most people listening to us, seeing us right now, intuitively already kind of know this. You can't get out of high school without reading a little bit about biology, history, and anthropology. You certainly can't get out of a college without knowing something about that. You can't read the major magazines, Time, Newsweek, any of the others, without seeing a story every now and then about our search for human origins. So we all intuitively know that we all came out of Africa. What this book, what this study, what this examination did that I tried to do was to show that not only biologically have we come out of Africa, but on our deep psychological and psychic reality, our very consciousness is rooted in an African template. You know, as a species, we've been around for, you know, in our present form, Homo sapiens sapiens, for 150,000 to, that's very, very, very conservative, to probably 200,000, if not more, years. And we had several migrations out of Africa. As our present species, Homo sapiens sapiens, not the other ones. But our surface appearances today as different ethnic and racial groups, that differentiation only began to happen about 25 to 30,000 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Really? Up until then, everybody looked pretty much African. And this includes our ancestors that moved up into Europe, into Asia, into Australia, and eventually over into the Americas. Racial ethnic diversification, as we call it, only started about 25 to 30,000 years ago. Prior to that time, we all looked like a species directly out of Africa.
Yeah,
that has profound influences.
Yeah, I've never heard that expressed before, but it kind of makes sense to me. I'm wondering, you know, given that there's so much strife around race, and race has been made a huge thing,
Right.
Have you gotten pushback on either the first book or this book, from racists or from other groups or perspectives?
Well, yes, I have. And, you know, I try to take it in stride, but there are some people who are, as you can imagine, are upset or offended by the very idea that they may in any way be related to African peoples, although intuitively they know it's true. And then on the other category, the other extreme, so to speak, are people who feel that, well, this African template thing, that belongs to me. That doesn't belong to anybody else. That's my thing.
Uh-huh.
You're not welcome here.
Uh-huh.
And so you have people at both ends of the spectrum.
Wow.
And I just followed the science where the science led.
Yeah.
And I also followed the intuition that, again, most people who are listening to us, you and I talking, and who know a modest amount about history, anthropology, reading Time, Newsweek, let alone National Geographic or watching documentaries, knows that our ancestors, all of us, emerge out of Africa and we spread to the rest of the world, and that we are all basically one family. We really are. Whether we like it or not, there are always, you know, hassles in families. Of course, that's just the way it is. But I think this is important because from my point of view, we're at a crucial point in our evolution as not only a society, but as a species. Yeah. We've just finished, or are finishing, the first early stages of space flight, space exploration. We have now begun to move into the commercial phase of this, which means that it's going to be accelerating. Right now, you've got to be super wealthy to get into outer space, so to speak, even to orbit. In the next 10 to 20 years, that's not going to be the case. We're going to start moving out in larger numbers. And God knows who or what we'll encounter as we move out. So we've got to have our act together. And our mythologies in the last 50 years or so have been trying to tell us that. You know, if you look at, I'm an affectionate person who follows follows Star Wars, Star Trek, a lot of outer space, et cetera, stories. Yeah. I just like the mythology.
Love that stuff.
But if you notice in all of those, the human species, as it moves out into space, has figured out who they are. They may have difficulties with who they encounter out there, but everybody on the human race, in the human species, recognizes that we've come to accept each other as what we are fundamentally. While we have our surface differences, and it will always be the case, and there's nothing wrong with that at all, but fundamentally, we are the same family, the same species.
Well,
is what will give us our strength.
I've sometimes had the thought that it would be a good thing if we were attacked from outer space, because then there'd be more of a chance of us pulling together as a common species to realize that, wait a second, this is a bigger problem, and we have to work together. So that's kind of a dark view of it too.
Well, you know who else said that? He was on television once, a radio, and he slipped. But Ronald Reagan said the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did. And I think he was talking about he was building these esoteric weapons, which, of course, we know only a little bit about. But he was building he was talking about the building of new exotic weapons. And he talked about humankind needs to band together, and said, wouldn't it be wonderful almost if we found that there were beings from other worlds watching us? We would have to come together as a species. And then he cut it off. But he said that.
Yeah, yeah. So how would you characterize what you refer to as the African unconscious?
Well, in most psychologists, psychiatrists, academics, mental health people, anthropologists, and so on, we recognize that, you know, there are different levels of the mind. And there's, you and I are talking right now from the level of everyday reality speech, and from the level of the I or the ego. So there's ego consciousness. And then we have a level below that that's referred to as our unconscious. And that's usually an individual phenomenon. And that's out of which our dreams come, mostly, not always, but mostly. And also our experiences of ourselves from the earliest of days in this life, in our particular bodies. But we also have a consciousness that it is partly inherited. And that's referred to as a collective unconscious. And it is the stored, learned experience of human beings in different roles, in different societies, in different cultures, for untold millennia. our experience with what it means to be a mother, a father, a sibling, a warrior, an artist, all these different, what Jung referred to as archetypes, all of this kind of information is largely inherited, and it is part of our collective unconscious. And the connection I made was that that collective unconscious, that huge storehouse of memories and information and wisdom and knowledge that sometimes comes through dreams and inspiration, is part of our collective unconscious. And that collective unconscious is African-rooted, because our species is. Our species is. So that is what that African unconscious is. And it spirals not only from the deep under unconscious, but it spirals all the way up to levels above our ego and self into what's called a superconscious. And that's defined by people who have either deep religious, spiritual, mystical experiences, people in moments of artistic and scientific creativity, intuitive insight, deep meditation, and so forth. It's a level of understanding and consciousness that is available, but it's not everyday knowledge. And all of that emerges out of that is our species. And that is what we refer to as our African-rooted unconscious that we all share, all partake of.
You know, initially, I think I sort of thought of African, the African art of today and the African art that's been dug up and discovered, you know, from the mm-hmm. past. But as I listen to you now, I'm realizing that doesn't go back far enough. That's actually all relatively recent.
And yes, so, it is.
And yes. So that doesn't necessarily describe this broader African unconscious that you're speaking about.
Yes. I mean, the symbolic arts in our species began about roughly 50,000 years ago. That's very rough, and spread around the earth very, very quickly, the symbolic mode of communication. Cave art, sculpture, and that sort of thing began really proliferating about 50,000 years ago. It was there before that time, but all of a sudden it really like took off. And we don't know why, but it took off in just about every place that human beings have migrated to on the planet. And subsequent to that time, we've had many rises and many falls, I believe, as a civilization. And so we've had civilizations that have fallen and we've totally forgotten about.
Yeah.
And, you know, the being on Earth by archaeologists every day, and some of them were pretty advanced, actually. But, you know, our civilization is pretty advanced, but we also recognize that we could mess it up.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we have messed it up in some major ways. And,
yeah.
And you were referring to some of those. And I'm wondering also about COVID among mm-hmm. the crises that are out there, that are here.
Yes.
And you working on this book in the time of COVID, what's the interaction between your ideas, what you're saying, and what's going on now with COVID, if any?
Well, it's an interesting fact that our species, Homo sapiens sapiens, in fact, going way back before Homo sapiens sapiens, back to the early hominids, out of which Homo sapiens and then Homo sapiens sapiens, thinking men, emerged, there have been a lot of different bifurcations, a lot of different pathways, a lot of different species that have emerged at various times. And interestingly enough, most of the species that we know about that emerged in the last 1 million years, that kind of led to us, they arose during radical changes in the environment and the climate.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they arose. It seems that, you know, when the climate changes, some of us are able to adapt to that change and some of us are not. And those of us who are not die off either through the land becomes untenable. various plagues come and wipe us out. Some even are destroyed by constant wars. There were civilizations in South America that were largely depleted because of constant wars. There was a whole lush, interconnected waterways and civilization in the Sahara of Africa about 7 to 10,000 years ago. And that area started drying up. And now it's all desert. But at one time, it was lush waterways. And there were civilizations there.
Yeah.
It's just they fell because the environment, the ecology changed.
Yeah.
And you know? So,
you know, evolution always seemed kind of like to operate on such a slow scale that it just seemed like a theoretical thing out there. and COVID has shown us that it can be very swift. These viruses are adapting and evolving.
Yes, they are.
So rapidly.
We
think we're the powerful ones, right?
Yeah, we can be brought down. We can be brought down. I mean, not only are the viruses mutating, but they have an opportunity as never before to travel.
Yeah,
they travel.
Right.
And something can happen in a laboratory in China that within a week can infect people in London.
Yep.
Before people know what happened. And that apparently is what happened with COVID. It came out of Wuhan in some way. We don't know. And it got transferred to various countries in Europe, Italy and Spain. And before they knew what was going on, and then the next thing we knew, it was in London. And then the next thing we knew, it was in the United States. And it was happening. It happened so fast that, you know, we're still not catching up. A lot of us are still not fully aware of the reality of the situation and how dangerous it is. People should remember that in the dark ages, unquote, in Europe, they had plagues that would come in. They came in, interestingly enough, another one, bubonic plague from China. And it wiped out a third or a quarter of the population of Europe within a year. Within a year, I believe, it wiped out a third or a quarter of the population.
And we know that it came from China?
Yes, we do. That bubonic plague back then, yes. Huh. But there have been other plagues. You know, the so-called Spanish flu that caused a havoc in Europe, that actually came out of the United States. it came out of the United States and was transferred by our troops and folks to Spain.
Yeah.
And they got the name Spanish flu, but its origin was here in the States.
Yeah.
And there have been others. But what's dangerous, particularly dangerous now, is how rapidly it can spread.
Right.
How rapidly it can spread. And in a free society like ours is primarily, not everybody has to go along with the program. And so, you know, it's not like China. Well, you can simply command that everybody get a vaccination and everybody get a shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you stamp that out as fast as it can. Here, it's like people debate it and they go on television and the people get misinformation and people can decide for themselves. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And as a consequence, we now have variants that are happening that would not have happened if we had all immediately not turned this into a quasi-political event, but it was seen as a health issue.
Yeah.
So this is where we are today. So, and
it's certainly
COVID is not the last. COVID will not be the last epidemic.
And it's interesting that the virus has turned out to be a metaphor for what happens with ideas. the spread and transmission of ideas.
Yes.
And viral ideas are as big a threat as the microbe virus.
Yes, they are. You can have a toxic idea. You can have an idea that will inflame the hostility and the imagination of someone else, such as they will go and they will do things that most of us would not do.
And it travels around the world.
It travels around the world.
Incredible speed.
And incredible, the speed of light, literally.
Yeah.
Through the information nets of various kinds. Yes. So that's the world that we're living in, and that was not the case, 100 years ago. But this is the new network we find ourselves in, for better or for worse.
Yeah. So I don't want to take you too far away from your book. Why don't you tell us more about what you see as sort of the main ideas in the book and what your hope would be for its impact?
Well, my part of the thrust of the book was to document in as close and detail a way that I could that are for anthropological reasons, biological reasons, genetic reasons, seriological or blood reasons, we all come out of the same cradle. We come out of the African womb. And not only do we do that biologically, all of our early sciences and religions and philosophical intuitions came out of the early African civilizations, particularly those that emerged along the Nile River in Nubia and Egypt. It's called the Egyptian-Nubian rise of civilization. And that happened somewhere 3,500 years plus ago. And there are different historians who will argue about it was 6,000 years ago based on this and that chronology and this and that data and this and that excavations. Others will say 3,500 years before Christ. And then there are others who, for good archaeological reasons, data reasons, bones reasons, cite the date of around 10,500 BC, what's called Zeptepi, the splendid time of the first time. The ancient Egyptians referred to it. That's how they referred to the beginning of their own civilization, 10,500 BC. The Sphinx looks into the horizon of Leo the Lion on the vernal equinox, 10,500 BC. That's no accident. And to build something that large and that precise indicates there was something else going on, a very complex civilization. And there were other people who've done extensive research to indicate that our civilization goes back to then. And then it fell for reasons that we've been kind of talking about. Aridization of the desert, global pandemics, all kinds of things that happened very quickly, and it was lost. And then we kind of crawled back for thousands of years until it began to rise again around, 3,500 to 4,000 BC, before the Common Era, before Christ. And that one has been sustained up until now. With different rises and falls, some empires, as we well know, are no longer here. There used to be a huge Persian empire. Where is it now? Right. There used to be an Aztec empire. Where is it now? Right. I say this because empires and civilizations do come and go. Our species has created many of them.
There are no guarantees.
And we are at the... we may be at the apex of our power as an American empire, if you want to use that word. And we are slowly beginning to see that we can't control everything. We can't.
No.
And so the days of the American imperialism, where we could dictate things, those days are gone. The Russians can't do it. The Chinese are not going to be able to do it. So empires and civilizations come and go, but we as a species, we keep generating them. And we are about to take a quantum leap. We're going to go into outer space. We really are. This is no longer a theoretical notion. This is now within the technological capacities of our species. We know that. And our book, the book was about psychologically, what will we be taking with us? Mm-hmm. Psychologically, emotionally, in terms of family structures, all of this may emerge out of Africa. It's part of the African template. This is our African unconscious. And we have to come to terms with that, hopefully in a peaceful way, because again, we may not be alone. And we have to have our act together. We really do.
Yeah.
And this does not mean getting rid of other our different ethnicities or anything like that. It means anything like that at all. It means what are the deep unifying aspects of us as a species, our very consciousness, our literally our consciousness itself, where that comes from. It comes from there. And then the book is about how that expresses itself in theology, science, psychology, in a number of other ways.
Does your writing and research have implications for how we get past some of the stuck places that we have right now in terms of the splits and divisions between groups of people? How do we, you know, and I guess your book in one way is certainly an attempt to address that, to say, hey, we're all one people. So yes. Let's cut it out. Let's cut out all this stuff, all these divisions, and come from a place that fully embraces that we're all one people.
Right. Yes. And that does not mean getting rid of differences. Not at all. The differences are wonderful. They're creative. And these nuances help enrich us. It's just that we need to do that in a positive way, such that we mutually enrich each other, as opposed to wanting to eliminate each other because of a difference. And that is one of the primary tasks of our era, which is unique, by the way, from past eras. This is a unique time for us. We now have an individual has the capacity to do enormous harm because of the nature of the society, the way it's structured, our capacity to make contact with horrific weapons. I mean, we do. So mental health and the recognition that, you know, we are all here and we need each other. Our differences can strengthen us. The real idea behind unity and diversity. This is what this is about. I remember it was in 1964, I believe it was. I believe I was in high school. I believe so. Anyway, I remember seeing a political commercial on television. It only aired once. It only aired once because there was such a hullabaloo afterwards. But it showed this little girl out in a field. And she's picking a flower and she's blowing on it. In the background, you can hear a countdown, clearly a missile launch. And she's blowing the, you know, dandelion, kind of looking up, and the count is 5, 4, 3, 2. And she looks up, 1. And then there's a huge nuclear bomb goes off. And she's wiped out. And then afterwards comes a voice that says, it was Lyndon Johnson. And he says, we must either love each other or die. And I was blown away by it. Uh-huh. I thought that was very powerful. They only showed it once because the other side says, no, that was way beyond the pale. But in a sense, that is the case. And a very soothing, for me, soothing part of that is that every major religion on the planet today has that as one of its primary tenets. You treat the other as you would treat yourself. They don't use the same words, but it's the same notion. You find it certainly at the heart of Christianity, in Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, that the human species is one, and that we must love each other, and we are one family. All of them, no exceptions. I'm not talking about a different sect that runs off in one crazy direction or other. I'm talking about the fundamental prophets who laid down these precepts that the overwhelming majority of us on the planet follow. Whether we are atheistic and believe in God or not, our ethical, moral basis that comes out of these, yes, says that. So both our science is pointing in that direction. Our politics of necessity is pointing in that direction. And it is supported by the reality of the scientific basis of the fact that we are all one species. And so I tried to articulate that in our African unconscious by showing it how it acts in particular kinds of ways in particular situations, not only in psychological terms, but in terms of anthropology, and also how our physical sciences, I'm talking about quantum mechanics and relativity theory and string theory, all posit that the world is a unified phenomenon. So they're coming from many different places. I tried to explicate that to the best of my ability.
Yeah, if I were to read through the chapter titles, actually it's too long probably to read through them all here, but they sure give a sense of everything that you're covering. Maybe I'll just skip around or start the diaspora or the great dispersion, the African origin of human consciousness, waves of hominids and their stock, the diaspora into the ancient Americas, the rise of civilization, the Egypto-Nubian legacy. You're referring to a lot of these things as we're talking here. The emergence of Kemetic Egypt and contact with other peoples, Asia, Mesopotamia, and the Americas during early civilization, the Dark Ages and medieval Europe, dispersion, genetics, and the mother tongue, the African unconscious, Oldowan, the ancient soul. What is Oldowan? That's something you refer to in the book. Let's dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, Oldowan is something that I've used it as sort of an organizing principle. But interestingly enough, that came to me, believe it or not, in a dream, the word. And it's somehow a fusion of the idea of an old and ancient soul and Olduvai Gorge, where the first early bones of humankind were on Earth, Olduvai Gorge, in East Africa. And so the older one is that ancient soul. And part of my background is that I'm also a poet. And so I took that image that came to me of an ancient ancestor looking into a pool or a pond untold millennia ago and seeing her own reflection in the pond and in the night sky reflected in the pond. And that's just sort of struck me. And so I have that image has visited me many different times. Uh-huh. And so that was the older one. And I use it as a sort of a literary device to some extent.
Yeah.
But it just helped me sort of organize things.
Yeah. So this book actually grows not only out of your intellectual explorations, but also out of your intuition.
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
You're not putting a wall up against that.
No, I'm not. No, I am absolutely not.
That. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Informed intuition is the basis of artistic and scientific discovery.
Yeah,
it really is. The aesthetic, the intuitive comes first, and the ideas slowly work themselves out of that. But the intuition comes first.
Yeah, that has struck me about, you know, the stories that they tell us about science and how science works, as if it starts with a very objective place of I have a hypothesis, I'm going to systematize, but it doesn't seem to work that way. Somebody's got this flash of insight, and then they spend the rest of their life. If the experiment doesn't come out right, they'll do it again a different way until it supports their intuition.
Right. I mean, Einstein recounts how his theory of relativity was an idea that bubbled in his head when he was a kid, and he came out of an intuition fantasy he had. He wondered, what would the world look like if I was riding on a beam of light? Yeah, that's how it came out.
Yeah,
and it took him.
What a silly idea, right?
What a silly idea.
Yeah,
a kid riding on a beam of light. What would the world look like? And gradually, out of that, the theory of relativity and general relativity eventually emerged.
Yeah,
20 years later, or 15 or whatever years later it was. But that's how it emerged. Yeah. Informed intuition for me spirals into that level of the mind that we were talking about earlier, that is not necessarily the unconscious, so to speak, below us, and certainly not the conscious that we're immersed in waking state, but that superconscious realm of intuition, insight, and illumination, literally illumination.
Yeah.
That is what that is. And we have symbols for that. You know, the capstone of the Egyptian pyramid, or in Tibet, the eye on many of the temples in Tibet, that single eye. And it finds its way actually on the dollar bill of the United States.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a pyramid, and on the top of that pyramid is an eye, that all-seeing eye. Well, that all-seeing eye represents the intuitive insight, literally in sight.
Yeah.
And we took that mystical symbol during the Roosevelt administration and put that on the American dollar bill. People don't really recognize that, but it's true. We have another mystical symbol that everybody sees, but we don't necessarily remember where it came from. And that is the medical caduceus. You know, if you go into a physician's office, somewhere in there, she will have or on the building that she's working in, a symbol. And the symbol is of two entwined serpents going up a pole. That is the medical caduceus. Well, that is also an ancient symbol of spiritual awakening. The two serpents crisscross along a pole 7 times until they reach the top. And when they do reach the top, they no longer cease being serpents, and they sprout wings and they can fly. Well, that was a symbol of the ancient Egyptian initiation sex. Yes, the rising of the serpent energy, the serpent power. Yes, that's where that comes from.
And people,
it's related, right there.
Yeah, is it also related to chakra, the idea of the chakra?
Yes, exactly the same. Exactly the same. It's right there in plain view. It's not hidden. It's right there in plain view. These things are all around our world. And this book is all about gently beginning to shift our vision, shift our attention, just enough to be able to sort of recognize that and to take advantage of those enormous collective unconscious, wealth that comes from all of our civilizations and all of our cultures, going back for hundreds of thousands of years. It is implicit in our brains and our minds. And if we can get beyond our fear, and there are many people who fear the African level of their consciousness for all kinds of complicated reasons, we can get beyond that fear. We can recognize that there is a untold amount of wealth and insight in there. Because Africa is not only where our species emerged, It's also where the first civilizations emerged. It's also where the three great religions emerged, you know? Right. The first 100 years of Christianity were spent primarily in the North African deserts. People think it was in Rome and Greece. Some of it, but most of the early church fathers, the one who wrote the theology, St. Augustine, many of the others, they were Africans. And they wrote about it. Wrote about Christianity.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Muhammad was in flight from Arabia, where'd he go? He went to Africa. You know? Judaism. Where did it come from? No, it didn't come from Palestine. It came out of Africa. Moses came out of Africa. About millions of Jews every year, millions, sit around the Passover Seder, and they say, they repeat, in Egypt, did Israel become a nation?
Yeah.
So it's right there. And so we just have to shift our lens a little bit so that it comes into focus. And when it does, it's much better for all of us. It's very healing, inclusive, accepting position, because we are all part of it and we're all welcome and we all have the right to do this.
You know what? That's such a good summary, I think, of the book right there, that this might be a good place for us to kind of close it off, unless there's something else that you want to add before we do.
No, I think you've been very good at bringing it to a focal point, and I'm more than satisfied.
Okay, great. Great. Well, Dr. Edward Bruce Bynum, I want to thank you for being my guest again on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, I really enjoyed this, David. I really, really, really did. I'm glad that I was able to have the opportunity to reach folks, and I hope some of this hits folks and they pick it up. Their intuition lets them know that, yeah, this is really true. I kind of already know this, really. Yeah. I think I'll follow up on it.
I'm particularly impressed by today's guest, Dr. Edward Bruce Bynum, on two accounts, among many. First, I'm struck by his intelligent and persevering scholarship to keep plugging away for 20 years on filling out, clarifying, and updating his original insights. Secondly, I'm gobsmacked by his optimism in the face of all that is so wrong and distressing about humankind and our planet's current and future prognosis. Despite all that, he really sees us moving out to space and the planetary system and maybe beyond, reseeding our ever-improving species into the universe. I'm sad to say I'm not nearly so hopeful. Yet he's too bright and grounded to be easily dismissed, having enjoyed a long academic career at a respected university, as well as a long and successful career as both a clinician and writer. The best way I can give you a sense of his writing in his rather visionary book, Our African Unconscious, The Black Origins of Mysticism and Psychology, is to quote from some of the passages that lay out his vision. For example, he notes the dire situation we find ourselves in when he writes, and I quote, "There is a new wind flowing across the landscape of Africa and across the inner landscapes of African diasporic peoples. It is a wind that sweeps before it the idols of a civilization shaken to its roots by a technology that pollutes the seas while extending some lives, is adrift amid the appalling moral contradictions of extravagant wealth and extreme poverty, and watches helplessly over the decay of cities, the rising grip of multinational corporations, and the final painful death spasm of outmoded political and economic paradigms. Communism as a force in the world is dead. Its cousin, the welfare state, is a sick child. In the United States, the greatest market of this empire, the vast majority of people feel its citadel is in moral and spiritual decline, its vision of itself sinking in sensationalism and ashes. That's some powerful words there. He goes on to describe four assumptions that root his thinking. And I quote, "The African unconscious, then, is paradoxically both the dark and the luminous deep structure that lives in each of us, regardless of surface racial and ethnic diversification. This will be echoed throughout each chapter. The book has four interrelated goals on which the themes, facts, and ideas are based." And then he goes on to tell us the four goals. And I quote, "One, to explain how the genetic, psychic, and spiritual and cultural origins of our species, Homo sapiens sapiens, are traceable to a collective and common African origin in spite of apparent differences between peoples based on, quotes, race, language, cultural style, spirituality, geographic location, and even era in history. Two, to reveal the innumerable ways in which all human beings are interwoven on the loom of a primordial, collective African unconscious. Three, to demonstrate how the many pathways to our literally felt and experienced psycho-spiritual awakening and unification with the energy of the universe are inextricably connected to the genetic, psychic, spiritual, and cultural processes that are rooted in the African origin of our species. Four, finally, to openly and non-apologetically encourage human beings, regardless of race and ethnicity, to individually and collectively strive for enlightenment and unification with themselves, other living beings, and the wider ecological and planetary energy that binds the whole of the universe together. At some point, our analysis will lead us, like the seafaring voyagers across the oceans to India and the Americas, where the conflicts and struggles of our species around race and ethnicity still provide an explosive mix for society and real politics. This confrontation is not only in the streets and the boardrooms and neighborhoods of the cities, but also in the academy, in the churches, in the images of the media, indeed implicit in even the shared social contract and mind itself." Close quote. So from this very down-to-earth and realistic assessment of our current circumstance, he takes us on a historical, anthropological, archaeological, theological, cosmological, psychological, and imaginal journey that after 400 pages extends to quantum physics, string theory, and space travel. If you're up for such a journey, you'll not be disappointed by Dr. Edward Bruce Bynum's Our African Unconscious, The Black Origins of Mysticism and Psychology.
Hi, Dave. This is Ofer calling from neighboring of Petaluma in Northern California, and I am the director of the Zur Institute, and I would like to share my deep, deep appreciation to your lively, informative, educational interviews. I want to let you know, not only we have used so many of them in our online courses for continuing education for mental health professionals, when I'm on the treadmill, I just put my Bluetooth and connect to any of your interview at random. And sometimes I find myself, oh my goodness, an hour later, I'm still on the treadmill, because I am so engulfed and mesmerized and engaged with listening to your live interviews. So thank you for providing such a fantastic resource to therapists, to educators, to the general public. So I can't wait to hear your next interview. And as you know, I'm not giving compliments very easily. and you'll be the first one to know that. So this is really, real appreciation from the bottom of my heart. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, friend and colleague, Dr. Ofer Zur, for this praise and for your willingness to help me turn some of these interviews into credit-worthy courses, CE courses. Thanks also to all of our regular longtime donors. It warms my heart each time I'm looking at the honor roll on our site, and I feel so supported by you faithful friends. You know who you are. So, once again, it's time to shrink wrap it up. I want to thank again my returning guest, Dr. Edward Bruce Bynum, for his lovely discussion with me of his new book, Our African Unconscious, The Black Origins of Mysticism and Psychology. And next week, I'll have yet another stellar returning guest in the form of Dr. Stephen G. Post, discussing his latest book, On Dignity for Deeply Forgetful People. Wait a second, is he talking about me? I hope you'll join us next week for another very stimulating discussion. So until then, this is Dr. Dave reminding you to be kind to yourselves and others.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.